What happens when we create machines that are as or more intelligent than we are? What are the possible timelines, implications, and ways forward to ensure we create the most positive future for our world? In this first sequence on timelines, we're looking at how these machines might be built and when that might happen. In later episodes, we'll dig more deeply into the implications of AGI and how we can ensure they benefit our world. This is the AGI Show, and I'm your host, Sarush Paul. Hunter J is our guest today. Hunter is the founder and CEO of fruit picking robotics company Ripe Robotics, and you'll also remember him as our co-host on episode one. Ripe Robotics uses AI computer vision and robotics to identify and pick fruits like apples and oranges off the tree. Every year, farmers around the world, especially in more advanced economies where labor rates are more expensive, struggle to find enough workers to pick all their fruit off the tree, leading to millions of tons of fresh fruit going to waste. Ripe Robotics tackles this and tackles the labor shortage and provides a bunch of additional data-driven insights about growing conditions so farmers can manage their orchards and get their fruit off the tree with less waste and cost and bring more great, affordable, fresh fruit to consumers. So, the reason I know a fair amount about Ripe Robotics is that I actually sit on the board of Ripe, and I've known Hunter now for many years as well. He's one of the sharpest and kindest people I know, and he's also deeply passionate about preparing the world for the eventual arrival of artificial general intelligence. So he's deeply knowledgeable on this topic. In fact, he's taught me many things along the way, and he was one of the people that really got me to reconsider the challenges and the issues, and got me more into this field. And I'm extremely excited to have him on the show today because of his deep knowledge. And what we're going to do today is we're going to dig into the timelines proposed by all of our prior AI expert guests, present our own timelines, so our own forecasts, which will be based on all the things that our prior guests have spoken about, as well as other key resources that we've pulled on outside that. And then we're going to have a great discussion between Hunter and I on kind of any differences in our different forecasts and uncertainties in that those forecasts as well. So, without further ado, really excited to have you back on the show, Hunter. Welcome. Just to start, do you want to tell us a little bit about yourself and what you do for your work?
Sure. So I'm the CEO of Ripe Robotics. I spend about half my time on engineering with Ripe, primarily software, but I also do a little bit of hardware engineering as well. And the other half of my time I spend on the business side of the company. Basically, we're a small startup. There's only four people on the team. So the other half includes all of the long-term strategy, the customer calls, the raising, and everything else related to running the company. Before starting Ripe, I worked as a software engineer doing eye tracking applications, and before that in game development. And before both of those, I majored in computer science at the University of Sydney, as well as did a few years of physics, maths, and some neuroscience while I was at uni. So very much a generalist nowadays, do a big mix of different things, and have been keeping up to date with AI, especially love using it at the small scale that we do at Ripe and in other projects, and particularly worried about alignment and keeping up to date on the larger advances in AI and how it's been going over the last couple of years.
Fantastic. And just for those listening, alignment is the term that the research community uses around people who are working to ensure that future advanced AI systems like AGI will be aligned with human values. So we'll understand and live up to human values and human goals. So that's what the term alignment is used for. Fantastic. So with that background, let's move into the meat of the topic, the important part of this podcast, which is the timelines. So just to clarify for our audience, what kind of guidelines I provided for Hunter and myself going into the predictions. So we actually spent the time to make predictions for three sets of things. They are artificial general intelligence, artificial super intelligence, or AGI and ASI, and then finally, what a situation we're terming intelligence explosion. So an AGI is what we've been talking about in these last several episodes. That's a machine, an artificial mind that can do most or all of the economically and politically useful tasks that a human can do. And ASI is very similar, except that it significantly exceeds the ability of humans. So not only matches, but it significantly exceeds humans at most or all of these economically and politically useful tasks. So those are the definitions for AGI and ASI. And then finally, we also gave our predictions, and we'll have some good discussions around this possibility of an intelligence explosion. So that is a situation, and this is by our definition of what that term means. That's a situation where the total intelligence in the world, you know, the intelligence of any minds that inhabit that world, dramatically increases over a short time period. Just to be a little bit more concrete, I'm loosely defining this as at least 100x growth in the cumulative intelligence of the world in a span of less than 10 years. So those are just some rough numbers to tell you the world's intelligence has grown really, really dramatically. Now, this could happen in any set of minds, but of course, in the discussion of this show, we're mostly talking about how that could be the case due to artificial minds, you know, either replicating or growing dramatically in their intelligence, or both. So those are the three definitions. Anything else to add there, Hunter, to any of those definitions?
Not really, although it's been pointed out before, but the particularly around the AGI one about whether most tasks is like 95% of tasks or just more than 50, and also whether it's mainly about like what one person can do. Like if you had a knowledge worker and most of what they do can be automated, then that's maybe already happened or is very close to happening. If it was what anyone out of all people can do, and 95% of what anyone out of all people can do, then it's more complicated, a bit further away.
So with those definitions out of the way, I think it's time to present our predictions. So for AGI, I came up with a 10% chance of AGI by the year 2043, so 20 years from today, a 50% chance by 2068, a 90% chance by 2150. So that was 2043, 2068, and 2150. And I wish we had a shared screen. I could put this all on, but I hope that's enough. If you need it, I'll make a Google Doc or something for us. So those were the 40s, the 60s, and 2150s for AGI, 10%, 50%, 90%. For ASI, it's pretty similar. I've essentially just added, I think if we have AGI, then ASI will come soon after and shouldn't take too long. So I added on the order of 10 to 30 years per prediction. So it's in the 50s, 2053, 2088, and 2180 for the 10, 50, and 90% chance. And then an intelligence explosion. So I first made a note to myself that I think there are scenarios under which this may never happen. Like it may not be actually on any time frame going to happen, this type of intelligence explosion type phenomenon. But I said that if we do, the pathway where it does happen, where it is feasible, is where we get to ASI. That feels like getting to artificial superintelligence feels like something that's almost like a prerequisite. And then after that point, there aren't any strong kind of limits or ceilings or impediments to kind of further rapid growth. And I did say that I do think it is a high likelihood event conditional on the world achieving artificial superintelligence. And so I said 10% chance of an intelligence explosion by 2063, a 50% chance by 2098. And I actually, for the 90% chance, didn't put any date. I don't know. Even if I was kind of looking at my, you know, timelines into forever, I put that as like we almost never get to 90% chance because it may just not be a possibility. There may be other impediments. And so I said 50% chance by 2098, but I didn't put in a prediction for 90% because I think it's possible that it's just not a feasible reality.
That's interesting. That's one we agree on completely. I also put never for 90% probability of intelligence explosion. Yeah.
That's awesome.
Yeah, we've got some significant differences here, especially on the first end.
Exciting.
You'll notice from my focus that they're extremely spread out in that I don't have strong confidence on much here. So my 10% prediction for AGI is actually next year. It's 2024, 10% chance that we have something that is good enough to pass this definition of AGI. That would be like we have GPT-5 and it has some significant improvements over GPT-4. It's more multimodal. It has it works as an agent over the internet and does knowledge work, and that counts as AGI.
Just to clarify on that one, did you exclude physical tasks? So it's not necessarily able to do what we can do with physical manipulation of the world, or do you imagine that's also included in your 10% by 2024?
I don't include it actually like using robots, like the robots being there to do things in the world for it. But I do think that you could count like it controlling like a simulated robot with instructions the way a person would. Like if it says move the hand to the ball and pick up the ball and move it to the desk, if it's able to say that, then I counted it as being able to do it. But not like, actually, I don't think there will be physical robots actually able to do that controlled by AI next year.
So it's almost like in a simulated physical environment, it's able to do these things, but not necessarily in the physical world.
Yeah, and given a real like bit of leeway on the interface, you know, if it knows what it wants to do there the same way a person does, but it doesn't necessarily, it's not necessarily able to like send the motor commands to the simulated robot arm. You know, if it says pick up the ball, I'm counting that as it knowing that it should pick up the ball and it doing it the way a person would. Although it probably doesn't matter that much, because I think if you're able to, like, if it's able to know that, it's probably not very far away from you could give it some controller interface and you actually have it do it in the simulated world.
Assuming we have the physical actuators in the physical world to do that, that aren't just humans, because if it's humans, then by definition, it's not doing what human can do.
Yeah. Although, I mean, maybe you can count it a person who's paralyzed from the neck down interacts with the world through machines and through other people. So if we're counting that as a human level intelligence, which I think maybe we should.
Yeah. I don't think we're picking humans in our world that can't do certain things to then compare it to, because that would obviously, I think we're talking something closer to the average human or the collective human abilities.
Yeah, but this is an interesting, like, we can get into the conversation now, because this is an interesting point where if it has the intelligence to do it, but not the physical capability to do it, it's kind of passing the bar of being able to do it. The main thing we should maybe be debating here is like, is this a couple of years away, 10% chance, or is it sort of 20 years away, 10% chance? Yeah.
Also, I think we can make our predictions comparable anyway, because I'll talk about this a little bit later, but I actually assume in the kind of the most optimistic path that a AGI can solve cognitive tasks first, and then only later gets to the point where it can do physical world type robotics and manipulation. So if I just take off that second part of the journey,
then it comes much earlier. Yeah.
Yeah. So actually, I put 2033 for the 10% chance of it's cognitively capable and then still needs to invent the physical manipulation of the world.
For 50% chance of AGI, I had 2029. And for 90% chance of AGI, I had 2060. For super intelligence, 10% chance by 2025, 50% chance by 2032, and 90% chance by 2080. So you can see it's quite spread out. I've got the 10% very early and the 90% reasonably late. And then for intelligence explosion, it almost exactly mirrors the super intelligence at 2025, 2032, and then never. Because we might be in a slow takeoff world, but we don't have the that fast of an acceleration in intelligence. But if we do get an artificial superintelligence within the next 10 years, we're probably not in the slow takeoff world. So it doesn't really change my date prediction for the start of a 10-year ramp up. Yeah,
that makes sense. I think I think the explosion then sounds like maybe where we're probably most aligned, and probably has the least like active discussion or debate there to be had. But yes, I hear what you're saying. Okay, that's really interesting. On the AGI front, it sounds like if we just look at, let's say, just look at the 10% mark first, that's like, you know, when it kind of somewhat is feasible. It actually seems if we take out my part about robotics being invented and things like that, and we just stick to the cognitive realm, we're not miles apart, actually. So you've got next year, I've got 2033 for that moment. So we're talking about 1 versus 10 years. Now, of course, it's not nothing, but it's you know, it's only one order of magnitude apart, not many decades.
I mean, the way I was thinking about this is you can kind of flip it. It's like, what odds do we think that GPT-5 or an equivalent model in the near future is going to be as good as a person across most of what a person does? I'm like, 90% chance it doesn't. It's not as good as a person. And when you put it that way, it sounds way less crazy to say 10% chance that it is. You know, 90% chance that it's not as good as us. I'm pretty sure it's not as good as us. I'm quite certain it's not as good as us, but I'm not more than 90% sure. So if you put it that way, that's how I kind of got to the number in my head, because I started with numbers that are a bit further away. I'm kind of curious, like, we've had such a big ramp up over the last 5 years or so. It seems like you're quite sure that there's a big, like the current paradigm of bigger models and more agentic large language models won't get us to something that's able to do most of what a person does. Like, you need it, 10 years is enough time for the paradigm to change, at least as large as the shift from not transformers to transformers, or what was it before transformers? Recurrent neural networks to transformers. So I was wondering what you were thinking then. Is that a fair assumption on my part?
Yeah, I think so. So all of this has been kind of grounded in a few things I've seen over the last little bit of time. So one is, you know, I've spent a lot of time playing with GPT-4 and kind of seeing what it is good at, what it can't, what it isn't good at. I've also been I recently re-implemented transformers for like the equivalent of a GPT-2 system from scratch. So I kind of got a good look at the internals of these systems. And then I'm trying to think to myself, well, what's left? You know, what do you need to take what we have today and get to something that you would call, let's say, cognitively AGI? Let's use that term to avoid the physical world. I don't actually want to list all of the things, because I think I don't want to give people who just want to kind of rush the world to AGI ideas about where exactly they should fill gaps to turn us into, to give us cognitive AGI, given some of the challenges and risks. But there is a list. You know, I actually have a list in front of me of, you know, what are the things that this thing is still missing. And when I look at the things that it is missing to turn into full AGI, they don't seem plausible things that will show up in the next 12 months. They look like things that will require some architectural changes, but some architectural changes that would require it to be, you know, cognitively an AGI. And they don't seem plausible to me that would show up in the next 12 months. I wouldn't put zero chance, but I wouldn't put 10% chance. So 10 years for me gives us more iteration cycles, more time for these architectural changes to come through the pipeline. And I still say 10% chance in 10 years, because I think that's still probably not enough. There are other bottlenecks beyond the architecture, but I think we do need some architectural changes, more fundamental architectural changes, before we get to something that looks like AGI.
Right. I mean, it's going to be a little bit of a hard conversation to have if we're trying to avoid saying what we think the missing pieces are. This is the argument around info hazards, or just secrecy, or just like trying to slow down development, which I'm for slowing down development. I'm extremely worried about where AGI will go, but not to the degree where I think that I think it's close, because I don't think these things are particularly hard to put in. Like you can make a large language model agentic by plugging its output into like it's already used for plugins. Say the way GPT-4 uses plugins is it comes up with what it wants to be done. It converts it to a JSON package or whatever that particular plugin is expecting. Then waits for the response. Response comes in along with a prompt which says basically translate this back given this original input to English for the user. So you can do multiple steps of thinking with the language models, and you could imagine them being put in a world where that's continuous, like a AutoGPT, I think, does something like that. And that's terrible right now. It doesn't work very well. But it also hasn't been developed very well. Like, people haven't put much time into it yet. AutoGPT came out like a week or two after, they might have been doing it with the earlier models, I'm not sure. But the version that uses GPT-4 came out very, very soon after GPT-4 had public access. And then, like, architectural changes on the scale of like GPT-3 to GPT-4, I agree with. Like, we're going to need that sort of scale. But that was big, and that only took a couple of years, going from like text only to multimodal inputs are possible, trained on presumably a much, much larger amount of compute, much larger set of data. Like, when I was thinking about this, I think data is a bottleneck. Improvements to the architecture are a bottleneck, but not in a way where you need like major theoretical breakthroughs. Like, there's a lot that GPT-4 could do when they first developed it that they only really got it reliably doing after went through reinforcement learning from human feedback to get useful outputs from it. I think there's more that it can do now that we haven't pulled from it, because it's just stored in this giant set of parameters. So, I mean, if compute's getting bigger, and if we can generate data by using the model itself to create good data the way you would by like getting it to do create coding problems for itself and then solve them and then only put the ones that were successful back into the data set, you could get this feedback loop. And now that there's so much money going into creating good hardware for it, and more efficient training things, like Atom is no longer the best optimizer for back propagation. I can't remember exactly, but I was reading recently about someone made improvements to that. There's lots of low hanging fruit here to make these models 10, 100, 1,000 times more effective, which is normal multiples for theoretical computer science over a period of a few years.
Yeah, I would agree that there are improvements coming. Like, that's undeniable. And I do agree there is still low-hanging fruit. I don't see that low-hanging fruit leading to AGI. But, like, there are other things that are harder that are important to tackle. You know, even if we look at the difference between GPT-3 and GPT-4, yeah, we definitely did see quite marked improvements in some things. Now, to be clear, almost all of those benchmarks have only come internally from OpenAI and to a lesser degree from Microsoft. And so, you know, we should take them all with a bit of a grain of salt. But there were improvements, but also there were a lot of things that didn't improve, or like, sorry, maybe didn't improve is too strong, but they didn't get to big new breakthroughs. I often play with GPT-4 and GPT-3 side by side in ChatGPT, and a lot of times, you know, the mistakes that GPT-3 makes, GPT-4 also makes, or the things that stop GPT-3 being AGI, GPT-4 also suffers from. I can talk about some of them. I think these are pretty obvious for anybody who's actually working on this stuff. So I'll talk about some of them at least. No online learning, you know, the inability for it to like keep getting better at all times and requiring like a big training phase. And then there is inference, and you can do some learning from the context window, but at the end of the day, that context window is not very big. And I had a really good discussion recently with another AI researcher about the context window and how equivalent it is or isn't to the type of online active learning. So active learning here meaning as new data comes in, my model is getting better. as compared to, say, for example, humans. And I think humans have a much stronger ability to take in new information, learn from it, and then have layers of memory, all different types of memory to pull in and out of. And I think those things are actually important. On modalities, you know, like GPT-4, yes, it theoretically can do image modality. There was a single demo from Greg Brockman in a video, but there's a reason they haven't put it into the actual ChatGPT. It's probably not that great yet. And even that is still scratching the surface of the world's modalities. You know, the world has a lot of modalities beyond just text and simple images, limited size images. So I think these are the kind of symbolic reasoning, like it can still be a lot stronger and doesn't do great on. So I just think there's still a pretty big distance between, or a sizable distance, let's just say, between GPT-4 and anything that I would call even cognitively AGI.
I mean, online learning is like, I'm less certain about this, but it seems like that's something that's solved, at least on a theoretical side. Like forward neural networks let you have online learning, like without a separate backpropagation sort of training step. It's less efficient than doing backpropagation and hasn't been done at a large scale. Like there's only sort of toy examples of forward training right now, but it seems like it could be doing like online learning without a separate training step. Or you could just do the training step, training like a separate training step each evening or whatever when people aren't using it. I don't know, ongoing. You know, you have a model, a rolling set of them. Like that doesn't seem like a massive barrier to me. Being able to choose what to learn from is a barrier that's stopping you there. But I mean, I also think GPT-4 is pretty good at figuring out like when it's given a good answer. I mean, there's simple ways of doing this, right? You have a person having a conversation with it, they're asking for a problem or a question or whatever, and then you could just give it that whole process, and then the user finally gets their answer at the end. They get it that it's right, and then okay, you know it went wrong at the start, it went well at the end, so you can add the end part into the training set, or the summarize the process and add in the end step, or the coding example like we spoke about before.
Something like online learning is a good case study. It's obviously not the whole problem, but it's a good case study. You know, something like online learning doesn't just require some changes to the algorithm. You know, something like, for example, this, you know, obviously when we say algorithm, there are many algorithms that are involved in any of these single architectures. You know, the algorithm related to figuring out the gradients, so for the figuring out losses, that's back propagation and these forward algorithms. You know, something like that is only, let's assume even that was a fundamental breakthrough between not being able to do online learning and being able to do, it's still not enough, actually, right? You still need to then say, okay, well, where is my data coming from? Like, where is all this? You know, so far these systems have been trained on huge corpuses and have required huge corpuses, huge scale to get meaningful improvements. So then the question is, okay, where does the data come from? How is it propagated into the weights? Then what does that actually result in? Because obviously when they're doing training today, there's a lot of engineers sitting there doing all kinds of tuning of hyperparameters and watching loss, you know, watching charts and curves and changing things. It's a totally different thing for something to be doing that autonomously and that autonomous learning leading to good results. Now, there are definitely papers out there. There are definitely people out there working on this, but like the plausibility of that then turning into a real complete functional system that in 12 months just doesn't pass the gut check for me.
And I mean, I'll take back a little bit on the forward thing, because I mean, you could just do a back propagation step in between each run.
Yeah, it doesn't need to be forward. Yeah.
But yeah, I don't know. It seems like I'm quite confident that it won't happen in the next 18 months, but not much more than 90% confident. Yeah, that's fair.
And look, these numbers are hard. So we definitely don't need to even end up agreeing on these things. I think just the discussion.
Yeah. Interesting. I'm just surprised it's a 10-year number for you that you're 90% sure that we won't have those problems solved or progressed enough that you have something that's able to do most stuff at a human level in 10 years. Yeah.
I think, yeah, my general kind of, I was thinking about kind of my general takeaways from doing this forecasting exercise. And while I don't have any confidence in a lot of this, any of the specifics really, because it gets so hard to predict, I would say as a general takeaway, my forecasts have gone longer. The more in depth I actually looked into some of the technical challenges, some of the realities, and I'll talk about more than just what we just talked about, because this is even this 10-year in 10% is 10%, right? So this is my really, really optimistic number. I just found, yeah, like not things that are unsolvable at all, but things I think will take more time to solve than maybe other people think or people haven't necessarily dug into. You read, Hunter, did you get to read the I want to pronounce the name correct because they did such a fantastic job, the Alan Foyer Sanders paper on AGI timelines? This was the one I sent you. It's by a OpenAI research engineer or technical staff member, excuse me, and Alan Foyer, he runs an AI product at GlaxoSmithKline. Did you get to look at that one? And for context for the audience only, this is a very recent report, so most people haven't seen it. I'm surprised it hasn't gotten more attention because I actually think it is really thorough. And you don't need to agree with every fact in there, but there's a lot of detailed thinking. And these are not people who have an obvious kind of incentive either way. If anything, one of them is an OpenAI engineer, they would expect shorter timelines. But they make a pretty strong case that really short timelines are unlikely, not impossible. I think they give a 0.4% chance of something that's more than our definition of AGI. It's more like, I think it's AGI, but it's a relatively strict definition of AGI by 2043, and they give a 40% chance by 2100, and I'll talk more about the specifics of what they have, but that definitely shifted my mind quite a bit on some of the challenges here as well.
Mm-hmm. I mean, this is the one where, like, I think I did skim it when you first sent it. I'd forgotten about it before doing this call. This is the one where they have a bunch of like events that they think need to happen for AGI to occur, and then they give each one a probability and then sort of multiply them together and get a really low odds at the end.
That's correct.
Yeah. I mean, I should really read the paper in a lot more detail before commenting on it. That methodology seems sketchy, because it's picking, like, you could keep coming up with more things that you think, like, I was going to say could I have like two numbers there? Like, how confident are we that this is actually required to hit AGI? And then how confident are we that it's going to happen? I'm not sure if they did that.
For what it's worth, I didn't pay too much attention. I mean, I looked at the headline forecast as an interesting forecast, but I mostly what I did with it was dig into the specifics and take bits and pieces and create new pathways. So I think there's different ways to use it. But yeah, I agree with you. You know, this multiplication properties has its ways of being wrong. But I do think they were pretty thoughtful, and they do even give some pretty careful explanation of the methodology and why they picked it and potential failure mode. So not necessarily endorsing the headline number, but I think the report itself is just full of fantastic insights into this forecast.
Well, what do you think the biggest things are there that would push your timelines back? What are the big things that you got out of it?
Yeah, no, great question. And I think this is a good chance to move into the 50% of timeline for AGI, because I think the 50% is where you'll see a lot more of my thinking that's been influenced by that paper. Maybe the 10%. So what was your 50% again, Hunter?
2029.
Yeah. So 2029, 50%. And for me, it was, I have to look at my own paper to remember all my numbers. It was 50% by 2068, so roughly 50 years from today. So maybe we'll dig into that one and see where the differences lie, and that could lead to something interesting. So I'll just quickly explain my 2068 prediction of 50% chance by then. So the things that that paper talks about, they talk about a number of things, but I'll just focus on some of the things that I found really interesting. So one is they look closely at the information from the bioanchors. So bioanchors refers to looking at the computations, the operations that a human brain is doing, and then looking at if that thing were in silicon, you know, when would we get to the cost and efficiency and scale of computation that we could match that. Now, one thing with the report is that they're looking at AGI when it gets to human costs. So like really low cost chips is just the way to think about it. Not when it's like takes the entire energy of the earth and every government in the world to get together. So they're looking at something slightly different. However, I think more importantly, they just look at that and go, okay, even if we're, and they look at the bioanchors piece really closely. So they don't take any one prediction. They actually look at multiple and kind of examine each one. But essentially what they say is, it looks like no matter which of these estimates you look at, it looks like we're going to need at least, I think they estimate, I'll say for the low cost AGI, five orders of magnitude improvement in kind of think of it as tasks per dollar, you know, like tasks compiled by a mind. So that takes into account both the lower costs of computation and also being more computationally efficient, so requiring less computation to complete a task. And they say five orders of magnitude across both those things. And what that just shows you, and then they look at, well, what does five orders of magnitude look like in the context of like Moore's law and hardware improvements? And they just say, this is a big leap. You know, in 20 years, this was two orders of magnitude, totally plausible. Beyond two orders of magnitude, you're really getting to like really unlikely odds. And I think what this just showed to me was if the bioanchor stuff is even a little bit right, then hardware is going to be a bottleneck. And therefore, the more plausible path to AGI looks like it's at least a few decades away, because hardware takes a while to kind of retool semiconductor foundries, or in potentially even moving away entirely from transistor technology, because we're talking about five orders of magnitude. It's a lot of improvement. So that was one thing. I'll pause there because I don't want to talk for too long. Hunter, if you had any thoughts on this kind of hardware bottleneck.
Yeah, that's a good point to chat about, because that makes sense. If we think that we're hardware bottlenecked, which was why I had my later predictions really, really far out, like 2080, I think I put the 90% on, 2060 for AGI and 2080 for transformative, and they're talking about transformative in the report, then that makes sense for long timelines there, because it's harder to speed up hardware than it is to have high confidence that we won't have algorithmic improvements that get us to AGI. Why, I guess the question would be why you or them, I'm not sure whether you're agreeing with the points here, why do we think five orders of magnitude specifically? I mean, it's from the bioanchors report on like the total computation done across what, a whole human lifetime. Can we be confident that humans are like as optimal learners as possible, or that the vast majority of computation that we're doing is put to the use in learning and applying general intelligence? Can we theoretically, why I'd have a lower number would be that maybe you could pick a small part of a human brain and then only doing tasks that are economically useful, rather than like controlling a body or all the other things that a brain does. There's a lot of sort of glial cells and all sorts of other stuff that's sort of wiggling stuff about, that it needs to have many very robust to very robust all sorts of things. If you had a highly optimized version of that that's safe and secure running on a computer and only trained to do the economically useful things, plus any algorithmic improvements that it might have over humans in effectiveness of using data, it's much worse than people today. but I'm not particularly confident that we wouldn't be able to figure out ways of making it more efficient. Could we require orders of magnitude less than human computation to make it work? And then also, I mean, human computation, how you measure it is very, very, like, even the biomakers report gives a lot of things here. There's, do you count every synapse as the equivalent of a transistor, or a whole, just a whole neuron as being equivalent to a weight, like a weight in a neural network? That gives many orders of magnitude range for bioinkers. Anyway, that's my thoughts off that off the top of my mind.
Yeah. Oh, I think it's a really good question. So I think firstly, do we think we will need orders of magnitude? We don't know. Like, obviously there's some error here. I think there's a definitely possibility that we don't. I'll give you the strongest case I can think of why we don't. The strongest case for why we don't, or one of the strongest arguments, is GPT-4, right? GPT-4 is not AGI, but it is really, really capable. You can ask it a huge number of things, and it will do a admirable, like, very good job on a lot of those tasks. Now, if we're many, 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 many orders of magnitude less than where we need to be, plus we, you know, haven't tapped out architecture and data, like non-hardware bottleneck type improvements, and we're already at this point, like, something there is telling us, like, at least some serious amount of cognition seems to be possible with much less obvious hardware, much less of the hardware that humans have than is obvious. So I think that's a really strong argument for why we probably don't need as much, or at least that it doesn't seem to be a hard, like, an obvious definite blocker. With that said, there's a chance that we do need a lot more, that we've gone to GPT-4, but we're, you know, going from GPT-4 to true AGI or ASI, there's still a lot left. And if that's the case, then we need to include that hardware bottleneck. So that's where, largely for my 10% chance, I said bioanchors is overestimated. We actually are able to work with our existing hardware with, you know, only tweaks or incremental improvements. That's where my 10% by 2043 comes from, because that's without any major hardware changes, or at least in the first half of that time period, like that we get to most of AGI. But then if we do need it, that's where my 50% bulk of the probability goes for longer timelines.
There's also a question of, like, efficiency, like neural, like actual brains, neurons are, like, notoriously slow. So we need, like, a ton of parallelization. I can't remember. I've got six in my mind, but I don't think that's right, as, like, the number of sequential steps.
They look at floating operations per second. So I think if neurons are slow, you would hope that that's part of the bioanchors estimate. Because you need more, but then your flops are still low. So I don't know, but they should be accounting for the time per neuron.
I mean, if you have lots of neurons that are slow, I'm saying it's not necessarily equivalent to a smaller number of artificial neurons that are fast.
But that would show up in the flops measure, right? Because we have the time denominator in floating operations per second, that would show up in that measure. If there were like 10 slow neurons that took 10 seconds to compute, then you would say that measure of that thing is, and let's say they can, each neuron can do one floating operation, then it would be one flops, because it would be 10 neurons, but they take 10 seconds. So per second, you're only getting on average one floating operation. Whereas if you had artificial neurons that were they could do one floating operation per second, then for 10 of those artificial neurons that have 10 times as much flops. So I think it should be captured in the flops measure.
Oh, yes. Yeah. But I'm saying that there's a difference between them being in parallel and being in serial. Theoretically, you can have a neural network able to solve any problem with just one hidden layer. But it's more efficient to have multiple hidden layers, because the processing done by the early ones can be used by the later ones. Even though it is theoretically possible to have it do everything that a deep neural network can do with just a single hidden layer, a really massive parallel layer. So I guess I'm suggesting, and I'm not sure, because I can't remember from the bioanchors report if they talk about this, that a much smaller number of neurons in total with a deeper network could be much more efficient than our sort of very wide and paralyzed brain, especially for the deep sort of planning tasks, the long-term sort of planning stuff that humans are good at compared with other animals. Most animals really can't do it very much at all. And is the thing that computers are kind of bad at compared with humans today. So if this hypothesis is right, and I don't think it has a very high chance of being right, but if it is the case that for complex things that need a lot of deep processing over a long time, having a deeper network rather than a wider network does better for that. And computers currently, you can make computers deeper more easily than you can make a brain deeper. And they're currently struggling at that specific thing. Then maybe there's significant stuff to be gained there.
Yeah, we definitely have the report, but I think, at least as I understand the BioAnchor's comparisons, they're looking at how many, they don't say where the floating operations happen. They just say how many floating point operations per second do we estimate the brain is doing? How many floating point operations per second do we estimate that, cutting edge systems or hypothetical systems of maximum scale could do? What would those things cost? What would the power inputs look like? And they just use the flops as the conversion between brain and synthetic mind. And in that comparison, the slowness of a neuron would be captured in the calculation, just in terms of how many total operations are happening, not the how those.
Yeah, not in terms of the specific way it's architected. Yeah, yeah,
correct. So I'll just quickly call out, just because it is interesting, a couple of other bottlenecks that the report calls out. So one is the hardware cost and energy efficiency and computational efficiency. The other that they call out, or two others that I'll call out. One they talk about. There may be limits to simply using existing corpuses of data to get all the way to AGI. So essentially what they say is it may be possible that we can get, I think GPT-4 has already proven that you could take corpuses of information and get quite far, but possibly some amount of sequential real-time learning, so sequential online learning, so moving through the world, may be required to learn a lot of tasks. And if that's the case, that time is very hard to compress. Even if, for example, the brain is moving very, very quickly, or you distribute it, potentially there's going to be somewhat sequential learning steps, and that will add. They're not saying this will centuries, but they're saying it may take years to kind of go through the sequential learning process of kind of reinforcement learning in the real world.
Yeah, so the sequential learning makes sense as a bottleneck for how fast you can learn something, assuming you don't start from a point where you're like god level intelligent already and you can figure out stuff from a very, very, very small amount of data. For something human level, yes, sequential learning I think is important. I wonder how much that can be paralyzed. To some degree it could be, but you also wouldn't learn from the previous steps. Like if you imagine you have a 10 million agents running in different sort of simulated worlds, and some of them in real robotic bodies or whatever. Yeah, like you wouldn't be able to learn from, like if you take two steps in one robotic body and you figure out a slightly better way of doing it, there's a bit of a delay before a different robotic body, you might learn the same failure modes across them all.
They go through this exact thought process in the paper, which is great. No, and then they talk about how they could be wrong as well.
I'm pretty sure recently there was someone had a real robot move under like an AI that had been reinforcement learned to move it within an hour, but without any pre-training, like no virtual training.
I did see it. So there's definitely people applying current state of the art to motion planning. The most prominent one that I'm aware of is PalmE, which is from Google Brain, and they took robotic sensor data and learned off that and got some pretty impressive scores on benchmarks. But yes, I heard about, this was a more recent headline, I think it was literally in the last week that I saw the headline, where somebody was learning quite quickly. But devil's in the details with these things. But yes, I did see some sort of headline. So I think, definitely, can we learn from the real world? Yes. Can we learn potentially faster than humans learn? Very possibly. Although to be fair to that one, we've had a lot. That one's one where we had a lot of evolutionary pressure to, for example, shorten the time it takes from birth to being like a fully capable adult. And for humans, despite the evolutionary pressure, it still takes us, 15 years from the moment we're born to like we're most of an adult. So although it takes maybe less to get to being walking and things, but it is a does seem to be a hard problem to kind of learn some of those things beyond simply just hard coding things.
Yeah. And I should say, because I haven't researched that particular news article I've had that I saw, there's actually a lot of fake news going around with ML stuff now, like claims that are just outlandish. Like someone said they got 100% pass rate on a thing, and it's, no, it didn't. That was not a very reputable study. They didn't actually do that. It kind of cheated a bit. Similar stuff comes out in AI news all the time. So don't take that one at face value. And also a reminder for all listeners, even if it's point on your side especially, lots of this news isn't real.
Avoid confirmation bias. Be very wary of things reinforcing whatever you already believe.
Yeah. And then the other thing, if it was real and it did learn within an hour to move a four-legged robotic dog body, animals do that all the time. Like they're born and they're up and walking within an hour. Maybe it's actually not that hard of a problem compared with the other things that humans do well, which is like this long-term planning and strategizing type stuff. Maybe it's not hard. Maybe it is hard in comparison. I'm not sure. But yeah.
In the paper, I think they talk about this in the context of across different tasks, although I can kind of already see a one reasonable rebuttal to that. So they're talking about learning to be a chef and learning to be a, let's say, real estate agent. They involve different things and you would have to learn. But those things feel like they probably can be parallelized, like human beings somewhat parallelized through specialization as well. So the point is, it does feel like, it's a point worth considering where does sequential learning end up being a bottleneck, but it's definitely not rock solid, or there's a lot of room for debate there for sure.
Also relevant for sequential learning, because I was talking about just before the biological neurons being so slow with sequential steps compared with artificial ones, which would mean that if you could do sequential learning in a simulated environment, the limit for how fast you can do that is really just how deep the model is and how many sequential steps you have per new piece of information to train it. So the stuff that could be simulated, even if you need to use training steps rather than having an existing data set for it, could be fairly fast compared with the stuff you might need to do in the real world. Simulations would never be obviously at some point they'll be very accurate to the real world, but before we train a very capable AI, there are differences between a simulation and a real world. If those differences actually matter is kind of the open question here.
That's already been proven by all the tasks that we have effectively trained, really super, super human AI, right? Chess, Go, video games, AlphaFold, protein sequence prediction, like these kinds of things, because they have some simulated environment or heuristic or something you could compute as the goal. Then all of a sudden, you've been able to kind of massively overtake human level capabilities. The question is, how broadly does that apply? How general are those learnings to kind of something we would, to the world's tasks and therefore AGI?
Is efficiency of training and inference of these big models worth chatting about for a moment? Because it seems like today we've got smaller models that are more capable than much larger models from a couple of years ago, because they're trained on more optimized data, they're trained in a more efficient way. Some of them are just distilled, so it's kind of cheating. You start with a bigger model and you distill it down to something that's...
Just want to kind of push on that. assumption or like the basic premise. Is that true? Like, I know people have been coming up with.
Oh, yeah, I'm not sure if it's true. That's what I was talking about. There's still ones. Like, if you cheat by making it smaller, yeah, afterwards, then it's not. You don't get the. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, there's been these, like, here's a 10 billion parameter model, and it's comparable to GPT-3, which was 175 billion parameters. But one, a lot of those things haven't been battle tested. They're just kind of the benchmarks have mostly been done by the authors. And yes, like you're saying, they've been bootstrapped off a much bigger model and then compressed down again.
Yeah. So you can't necessarily build it up to be that small. You might have to start large and then shrink it down. It seems a lot easier. But, I mean, maybe that's an important question to ask. And it's useful maybe that we don't know the answer right now is like, if we can see, like, we know the cost of training a GP3 equivalent or GP2 equivalent today is much lower than it was in the past because of hardware improvements. How big algorithmic improvement have we made in the last couple of years? That's a useful question. Because then, I mean, you could put that on a trend and see maybe that would help with the prediction of, do we actually need 5 orders of magnitude more compute, or is it 2 orders of magnitude more compute and 3 orders of magnitude expected algorithmic improvements?
It's a big question. I will link in the show notes to some research trends from a really fantastic research group that does a lot of research into this sort of thing called Epoch AI. So I'll definitely link to it. But yeah, it's a big question, not a simple question. I mean, obviously, it's clear that we've had algorithmic breakthroughs. You know, things like transformers and GPTs and these things have been, like, you couldn't take just simply scale pre-transformers or at least pre-GPT and do it. In fact, some of the time, it's not even the bottleneck isn't the compute or the data existing, it's being able to combine the things, right? For example, for the GPTs, there was an innovation that we could do self-supervised learning in this kind of next prediction token way. And, you know, you could there's been some number of papers, but, you know, that's a relatively new idea and innovation in the last decade or so. So, yeah, so it looks like algorithmic improvements are definitely important. You know, you need those things. It's not just a pure number of brute forcing the problem.
I guess the summary of this whole section would be that we both agree we need more compute and we need better data. We sort of disagree about maybe how easy it is to get better data.
And maybe better algorithms better. As well. Maybe difficulty of better algorithms as well.
Yeah. And I mean, I think we've both got reasonably high uncertainty on it. Like, I've got like quite a multi-decade period between a 10% and 90% guess. But I mean, the thing that's really standing out, which was covered, is like, I'm still a bit surprised at the 90% chance of us not having anything human level within 10 years.
If we haven't got to AGI in the short time frames, then I suspect what's happened is that it's just a really hard problem. You know, something like we need to do more big breakthroughs on the algorithms. We need to do big breakthroughs on the hardware, especially the hardware feels like a sticking point. Like, we've invested so much of our world into transistors that if it is the case that taking transistors and kind of the current paradigm and to then turn that into something more like a general intelligence is just really hard. Because we know brains are the proof of concept that this is possible, but if brains are just so far from transistors that they just don't match until you really make massive changes, then it's just the fact that, like, for whatever reason, it's much harder than we thought. And then I do assume that, though, we still will eventually get there. But I kind of have like a longer tail of like, okay, if we didn't get there soon, then like it's probably really hard and it's like some point far in the future. And I just picked a number of 2150. So like give us a lot, like it's a long time before I can say 90% hand on heart, we have this thing. And then the other 10% really I put down to mostly like, you know, 2150 feels long enough where we've had time to kind of solve all the problems. And if it's the last 10% is honestly events like other catastrophes knocking us back, or other existential risks, and then the other 10% is like it's either never invented or it's invented, you know, by a completely different generation of people, you know, hundreds or thousands of years from now, potentially, or never on planet Earth. So 90% chance by 2150 to capture the fact that it's a really hard problem. It's going to take us a long time to be confident we can do it. And then beyond that, it's really hard to predict.
Yeah, I basically agree with you there. We picked a radically different number in absolute terms because I picked 2060 for 90%. But I think that's really just a function of me having a lot more probability mass early on. So my thing similarly looks like a long tail. But you hit 90% on the long tail a lot earlier because I've put such high probability, 50% probability this decade, and then very long the other 50%, hitting 90% like three more decades after that, 37 years from now. But yeah, similarly think that if it's taking that long, then it's because we need multiple new ideas on the scale of shifting to transformers, or like multiple things that large. Probably I didn't really include having to do a shift away from transistors, like smaller scale than vacuum tubes to transistors in my mind still gets us above 90% probability. But like something about it, it takes way longer to get enough compute in one spot, or we need more compute than I expect, or regulation or other things slow it down a little bit, gets us to about 2060 with the remaining 10% really stretched out over, 100 years post that. Yeah.
Yep. Makes sense. And I definitely, definitely didn't feel confident about my 2150 number either. I could have got a few different ways with that one.
So when you've got something that looks like that and you're drawing the 90% line, it's a lot. It's just, yeah.
It's like almost, it's not asymptotic, but it's a long tail. Yeah. So adding that up, it is logarithmic. If you look at the cumulative, it becomes kind of a slow asymptote towards 100%. So maybe let's talk about ASI and intelligence explosion. So for me, I said for ASI, I said if we get to true AGI, so we've got this thing that can do almost all human tasks, and I'm even talking in the physical realm at this point, then I feel like something that's just better, fundamentally better, and it starts to exceed humans feels very tractable. I don't currently at this stage foresee any hard blocks at AGI where it just kind of stops there. I think it'll keep going. And so I just kind of added on the order of 10 to 30 years after AGI. And if it was a later prediction, then I added more time, which you could go either way. But my logic was if it's taking us longer, then the curve is just less steep to getting us there, or the problem, and that could be because the problem's really hard, or our technology is just not developing the way we expected it. And so, yeah, you know, on the order of 10% chance in the 2050s, all the way through to the late 2100s for a 90% chance of ASI.
Yeah, yeah, okay. Maybe our main difference is on the gap between the hitting general intelligence, hitting super intelligence. I had a very short period between them, except on the long time frame. I had 20 years on the long end, because I was assuming it's like a lot of probability mass on it being compute or regulation or some other limiting factor in the long time frames. But in the, maybe that's actually, you've applied that to all of the time frames, because all of yours are long compared with mine. I'm expecting like most things that we hit human level with, quite quickly exceed human level for narrow tasks that we've had so far, and I don't really expect there to be an exception for general intelligence. I actually expect it really to accelerate as the AI becomes smarter, because it helps. Like already now, AI is speeding up our development of AI. Expecting that to continue, and at some point, it's doing all of the development for more AI. Maybe part of it is also the definition of like significantly better than a person, and human level is, you know, they seem quite tight to me. So I had basically the same years for AGI as ASI, plus 1 or 2 years for a bit of a ramp up. Except in the case where it takes us a long time to get to AGI, maybe there's things slowing it down like compute, and then longer period for longer takeoff in the longer scenario. So 20, 30 years on top of how long it takes us to get AGI. Yeah.
One of the things I think the Sanders Alin Fourier report does a really good job of is talking about not just getting to AGI, but its cost. And the fact that it's possible we will get to AGI, They essentially say it will get there, but then it'll take a while to get down to the say equivalent of $25 an hour, so like a human cost of work. And therefore, I could imagine a world where, for example, we get something that's human level, but it lives in a giant data center, or even several data centers, depending on how the world evolves. And that, for me, that's like not an immediate drop into ASI. That's like, okay, cool, we've got this like pretty smart human, or like 100, let's say 100 IQ like human, or 150 IQ, but like that alone isn't enough to like cause a huge steep curve at that point. It still takes time for us to go from that to there's so many of these AGIs, or they're individually so much better that it really causes a serious acceleration into like what I call ASI. So depending on your exact definitions, that could be that's where essentially some of my gap comes in as well. I think it takes some time from human level to it's now clearly better in a lot of ways.
And part of that could also be the architectures that we're imagining. Like if you're looking further out to the future and you're expecting something to need to be like continuously learning with something like the compute of learning and the compute of inference being roughly equal. Whereas if we're looking very short-term type stuff, the training compute is so much more than the inference compute, which would explain why, first AI to being used all the time, if you have this similar drop between training and most cases of inference being a short period, but if you're saying training and inference to be combined before that time, then you have a longer time between. That makes sense to me, and why we have a bit of a difference there.
I think that's I had that same call out as well about the big difference in costs of training and inference, and depending on how exactly the rest of your forecast looks, then that makes a pretty big difference there. Intelligence explosion. I feel like I've always been going first, so rather than do that this time again, Hunter, maybe you want to give your take on probabilities of intelligence explosion. Yeah.
I mean, if we're treating intelligence explosion as like 100x in like scale of how much intelligence there is in the world within 10 years, like we might already be in it. It's kind of crazy to think about. Like suppose GPT-4, very useful for programming with first access is with the machine learning researchers who developed it. If that accelerates them a little bit to build GPT-5 or to test all these different paradigms, like suppose you're bottlenecked not by ideas to test, but by actually implementing them and running them. And you just did this giant run of this giant neural network, so you got all this compute already sort of sitting there that you're not running a new neural network. You can do many, many small tests on that same compute, which you use this giant model to test all your different ideas, because you say, hey, here's my idea, and it writes code to do that. GPT-4 already does that not very well. It needs a lot of human human question, and then it gives you bits and pieces. Say you do GPT-5 and does that a bit better. GPT-6, you get whole programs out of it. You could have that run away pretty quickly, especially since the people that are using this and able to get the biggest benefit from it are the ones who are developing. So it's not unconceivable to me that that's already happening, and we will have 100x improvement, scale up in intelligence in the next 10 years, which is why my intelligence explosion number, the 10% chance, is basically the same as the AGI and ASI, which is like 2025 or 2024. I think I put 2025 for intelligence explosion starting point.
I think you make some really good points, and this one's a hard one to reason about, because obviously for one we don't have a measure of collective intelligence. So for example, how much did our collective intelligence go up when the internet came around and people adopted that? Like there was obviously some significant increase. Was it 2x? Was it 5x? Was it 10x? I don't know. But yeah, assuming what we're talking about here, just for the sake of for my definitions, like it you can just like visibly, it's so obvious, no one's disputing it. It's just like the world is just so much more capable of invention, and the world's kind of changing around you because of it. If that's what we're talking about, for me, that's like largely the same time as when we get to artificial superintelligence. Because I think if there needs to be this big run off from wherever it starts, then it needs to be something much better than us, because you know we're already the baseline at that point, and it's what comes on top of us that accelerates things. In addition to whatever baseline intelligence we provide as humans and our tools. And so, yeah, artificial superintelligence being the thing that's dramatically better than us is largely overlaps with this one. And so, roughly speaking, my predictions here are when we get ASI, we also get intelligence explosion. I put a little bit of extra time because maybe it needs like a certain escape velocity for it to be like a really true virtuous cycle of rapid growth. Maybe it takes a little bit longer, but roughly speaking, any time after ASI, this feels feasible but not guaranteed that we get a big explosion in new minds that are also that increase the collective intelligence world of the world by a lot.
Yeah, that makes sense. I mean, interesting that you put it after ASI. If like we're talking about a ramp up, you wouldn't put it starting at an earlier date. I mean, a lot of it maybe also comes down to the definition of what we're calling intelligence explosion. You could kind of say like maybe it's been happening for 5 years now because the total intelligence might. Oh, that would be a stretch because of all the biological intelligence, but. Yeah, computer intelligence has definitely increased 10x in the last 10 years.
Yeah, I know what you mean. It's grown a lot. I mean, look at today when like a new technology like GPT-4 comes out, how rapidly we get like further iterations on that thing and like improvements and like any idea becomes realized. Like that was not the case 50 years ago. That wasn't even the case 30 years ago. So I think, yeah, there's definitely some steep curve of intelligence growth already. And then I think this is one thing worth calling out, and sorry, I was going to talk about this in the context of AGI and ASI, but also it's not like human beings are static either. Like human beings use technology to amplify their own intelligence, and for me in the comparison of AGI versus humans, like I include like the tools that we use to increase our intelligence. So it's not that humans are static. We're also growing in terms of our capabilities and the tasks that we can accomplish. So, yeah, the race becomes a bit harder to measure when there's actually two curves that are both moving.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Also, maybe that's a definition thing here, because I was thinking intelligence explosion as in total intelligence of the planet, including humans. And
it is for intelligence explosion, but for AGI and ASI.
And I mean, I definitely think that even if you had AGI, like if it's human level AGI, you still need humans to help it develop something more powerful. I think it quickly you don't necessarily need humans anymore, at least not necessarily helping with the development. But there will probably be a brief period between a period. I don't know how brief between having something that's human level and not having people be the ones developing the successes, or at least being big part of developing the successes. It's not like instant you have humans out of the loop as soon as you have something equivalent to humans running on the computer. Maybe as we're getting the wrap up here, there was a great set of forecasts I was reading related to this about the Extropian predictions from the 90s, which these are like the predecessor to Less Wrong and the group that calls themselves rationalists now. And there was a bunch of interesting predictions that they had from their magazine, from a magazine serving the same sort of community in the 90s. So I found those looking through those from 30 years ago quite interesting. I think Ryan was saying about super forecasting applied here, because almost all of it was too optimistic. And a lot of the things that they got right were surprise. Like there were predictions about things like cryptocurrencies coming on board, and they technically got the predictions right. And like, there's this number of people with this currency, and you know, but it didn't have the impact that they would have expected it to have. So it's quite possible we hit our technical definitions of, yeah, I mean, today we've got GPT-4, which does all sorts of crazy stuff, which 10 years ago are like, holy smokes, that's AGI. But it hasn't yet had the scale of impact that we would have expected it to have in the past, or maybe we would have expected it to have in the past. So I thought that was worth mentioning. We could hit specific definitions for a prediction without it having the society-wide impact that we would expect. Probably impossible for something as big as ASI, but for AGI or very specific definitions of ASI, we might have that happen. Also related is, like, we keep changing the milestones for it. Like, we thought that a good test, like, we didn't, I wasn't alive, people thought that the good test for AGI would be like, could it play chess better than a person, or could it have a conversation? And we've already passed those, but we don't really consider those systems to be as intelligent as people, even though it can have a text conversation that passes the Turing test for the majority of people talking with it. And the other notable thing on all that is the predictions that they had for compute were notable for actually being accurate.
Really?
everything except compute wasn't very accurate, but the few that were related to computing, like there's some predictable trend ones. There was like number of people who were going to be using the internet, number of people, like how much is going to be digitized. Those were reasonably accurate, but they had a very clear trend of the internet starting to take off at that point, and very clear trend of compute improving at that point. So those held to trend, and so yeah.
Maybe the learning there is like trend lines, like quantifiable trend lines, are actually quite useful tools. In which case, I definitely do recommend people. Not that you have to take the headline prediction, but as far as data, look at Epoch AI and also the Sanders-Allen Fourier report, because there's a lot of that sort of data in there that's quite useful to think about. Really good call out, Honta, and yeah, you've given us a good segue into future episodes, which is about not just whether we will invent these things, but also what impact they'll have. And the impact is a function not only of the technology, but also of the policy and what we choose to adopt and how we adopt it. And I think that'll be a big part of the next leg of conversations. So that'll be fantastic. Some key takeaways from me. I've got 3 dot points here that I wrote for myself. Forecasting is hard. Like picking dates and picking specifics is difficult. This is much harder than I ever anticipated or really thought about until this sequence of episodes. And you could really spend a lot of time on this. Most importantly, I think for me personally, my timelines have gone longer due to this exercise. Like looking at all the information from all the different actors, I still believe that AGI is possible. I think it's worth preparing for, and I think it's worth thinking about. But the actual probable timelines are probably on the order of decades rather than years, and so I put less credence on probabilities or predictions that are like sub 10 years. Put more credence on the longer range ones. And that gives me a lot of comfort, because this is a big thing and I'd like us to be, you know, have the time to prepare adequately for what's coming.
I definitely hope you're right about right about that one.
What do you think? What are your takeaways from all of these discussions and your work doing the predictions?
I'm kind of like my timelines didn't change a lot, which is kind of interesting because they changed a lot in individual settings. Like when I first read about the bioanchors thing, I was like, okay, that's good. That pushes it back a little bit. And then, you know, I'll be thinking about it or read criticisms of it, and it's like, yeah, okay, that doesn't seem as solid as it looked at first glance. There are all these ways you could do something much more efficiently than a human brain, and also those guesses as the magnitude of the human brain aren't particularly reliable. Then large language models are the thing today, and originally I was thinking, that doesn't seem like it could become agentic and really like be the paradigm that gets us to AGI. So we need at least one more major paradigm shift here. And then Logan in the first conversation, or it might have been a conversation I had with him immediately before that call, was talking about, oh, here's the ways it could become agentic. And then since then, people made GPT-4 into like this proto thing that can operate in a in an ongoing way, even if it's not actively learning in the ongoing way. So, okay, maybe large language models can get us there. So I've been going back and forth a lot, which overall has not really affected the timelines, except to spread them out a lot. You know, I've got all the way from AGI could happen anytime from next year to 50 years time, and I don't really know when in between. So yeah, I've gotten more uncertain. I have no idea when this is going to happen. Except that things seem to be moving quickly. Things are moving quickly. We just don't know how much further we've got to go before it happens.
Yeah, I definitely agree with those last statements for sure. And I think it sounds like, yeah, we have a lot of similarities, like overlaps in our thinking. So it doesn't look like, yeah, at least with the two of us kind of questioning each other, like some things seem more credible or rock solid in terms of being tested. And then other things we differ on, mostly just like maybe the how much probability mass we put on the next 10 to 20 years of what's possible in the next 10 to 20 years. And then there's a lot of similarities. But yeah, we'll leave it there. Thank you, Hunter, for all the time you put in preparing for this and all the work that you do, kind of thinking about these challenges. I hope that was an interesting one for our audience. This will be the wrap up for our timelines series. And from here onwards, we'll be looking into the implications and challenges and responses that we'll want to the future with more advanced AI systems, and in particular, AGI type systems. So we'll be interviewing a lot of great guests there. So thank you, Hunter, and thank you to all our listeners. Until next time.
Thanks, Arush. Thanks, everybody.